Hey friends, it's Ashley. Before we get started, I just wanted to tell you about the Patreon, which I hate talking about, and I feel like I want to crawl into my sweater, even bringing it up, but it's an important way that this podcast stays alive. Through big and small donations from listeners, we're able to bring you interesting and relevant stories about the coffee world. You can donate anywhere from $1 a month to $25, and your donations are what keep this whole project going. We're going to be talking about the Patreon a little bit more in the coming weeks. So if you can, please consider donating by going to patreon.com/bossbarista. If you've benefited at all from this show, especially if you're in a position of power, I urge you to consider making a donation. Okay, now on to the show. Hey friends, this is Boss Barista. I'm Ashley Rodriguez. Take a minute to think, what does specialty coffee mean to you? If you work in coffee, it might mean one thing. If you don't work in coffee, it might mean another. The word specialty implies something unique, different, dare I say special, but something that makes it different than just regular coffee, right? For something to be a specialty item, something else has to exist that's decidedly not specialty. Today, we're going to break down what specialty is and what makes a thing special with Sarah Nguyen, founder of Nguyen Coffee Supply in Brooklyn, New York. Sarah was a filmmaker and owned a restaurant in New York and often found herself in coffee shops that had some of the quote-unquote signals of specialty coffee. Coffees from a single origin, for example. She'd see coffees from Ethiopia, Honduras, Indonesia, and wonder, what about Vietnam? Sarah is Vietnamese and would see restaurants and cafes advertise Vietnamese iced coffee, and oftentimes found that people didn't actually use coffee from Vietnam in their drinks. As she questioned this, why would a coffee drink claiming to be from Vietnam not have coffee grown in Vietnam in it? She encountered some of the questions that we have about specialty. Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world and the first largest producer of Robusta coffee. So why couldn't she order a coffee from Vietnam in her local cafe? Coffees from Vietnam don't get talked a lot in the specialty market. You don't see them winning barista competitions, and you likely can't order them by name at most cafes. But if you've had instant coffee, if you've had something from a can, any sort of diner coffee, you've had Vietnamese coffee. So what is it? Why isn't it talked about in the specialty world? In this episode, we explore what it means for a product to be considered special, and we ask, is specialty inherent, or is it created? A quick note on this episode. Our energy is pretty high, and both Sarah and I talk very, very fast. You might want to take a note of that, and you might even consider listening to this at a slower speed. Without further ado, here's Sarah. Where does this story kind of start for you? Like, when did you start getting interested in Vietnamese coffee specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm Vietnamese American, and my parents are Vietnamese. They're both refugees. They escaped the country after the Vietnam War. And so for me, like, Vietnamese coffee as a culture has always been a part of my life. You know, I've experienced it growing up, and also when I would go back to Vietnam. Throughout my childhood and my teenage years and a lot in my adult years, drinking Vietnamese coffee or like Cafe Phin or Cafe Sira was always like a big part of my culture experience. But really entering, in terms of my journey, entering into like the coffee space as a professional, it's really a new journey. I would say in like around 2016 was when the idea first started brewing for me. I had a small restaurant here in Brooklyn, and so I've always been a part of like the food and beverage community. And around, you know, 2015, 16, like Vietnamese food and culture was really having its moment in the culinary world, especially in New York City. We were seeing the emergence of like so many amazing first generation, more modernized Vietnamese American restaurants. And on a similar wavelength, I noticed that Vietnamese coffee was also trending. Like I would go into non-Vietnamese cafes and restaurants, and I would just see the words Vietnamese coffee on a menu. And I thought, oh, this is so exciting. Like Vietnamese coffee is having a moment right now, right? Outside of the Vietnamese restaurants or the mom and pop restaurants in Chinatown. But actually what I was noticing was that like a lot of these places were putting Vietnamese coffee in their menus, but they weren't even using Vietnamese coffee beans, right? And I would ask them, because I would drink it, it would taste totally not like the Vietnamese coffee I knew. And I would ask them, like, oh, how do you make this Vietnamese coffee? And they would say they use, like, their cold brew, their house cold brew, or, like, their drip, or, like, their house espresso. And they added condensed milk, right? And oftentimes these beans were not Vietnamese coffee beans. They might have been, like, a bean from South America or Africa. And they were treating it as, calling it Vietnamese coffee because they add a condensed milk to it, right? So, I mean, right. In Vietnamese culture, there is a culture. I mean, there is a style where people use condensed milk, but it's not a requirement. But most of all, it's not like the core piece of Vietnamese coffee. The core piece is Vietnamese coffee beans. And so I thought that was really interesting that as a culture, people were interested in Vietnamese coffee. But in terms of like as a product, it really wasn't accessible or being utilized. And I think the biggest issue for me there, I mean, as a Vietnamese American, I felt like a huge level of injustice being done, because I felt like Vietnamese people and Vietnamese producers were not benefiting from this transaction, right? In this trend.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, at what point though did you see this problem and decide like, oh, I can fix this, or not fix it maybe, but like, how can I be like a change maker in this process?
Yeah.
Cause that's a huge jump.
It was a really big jump. And the way it happened was I was like, okay, well, why are they using Vietnamese coffee beans? And I was like, well, you know what? I want to make some Vietnamese coffee right now. And so I would go into the grocery stores and I'd go into every like coffee shop and cafe, and I would look for a single origin Vietnamese coffee bean, and actually I could not find it. And that's when like the light bulb kind of like went off, and I was shocked that I couldn't find it, because, you know, especially Third Wave Movement was all about like all these different single origins, right? And being so transparent, I was finding coffee from all around the world, but not one transparently Vietnamese coffee bean. So that's when I was like, oh, well, maybe I should bring it here. And so
yeah, how did that even start? Like, what was the first step to even begin thinking, let me bring this coffee here and start importing it?
Yeah, so that idea first came to me in 2016, and I remember like in fall of 2016 I was going to Vietnam to visit some family relatives, and I was actually on the way to Cambodia to film one of my documentaries at the time. Before I started the coffee company, I was a full-time journalist and documentary filmmaker. So I just hit up, and most of my relatives, most of my extended family are still in Vietnam. And so I hit them up and I was like, hey, I'm coming to Vietnam. And I was like, curious question, does anybody know anyone who has a coffee farm or who has access to one? And my aunt was like, oh, actually, I do know someone. Someone I used to work with at my company left the company to take over his family farm. And so my aunt lives in Hanoi, which is in the north. And then his farm, Antien, who's my current producing partner, his farm is in Dalat, which is in like the central region. So we arranged a trip where we flew from Hanoi to Dalat to meet up with him. This was in 2016. And that was pretty much the beginning of our relationship.
Just from there, you were like, this is happening. Let's bring this over here.
I mean, it didn't happen that fast. So in 2016, like, we went to his farm, you know, I met Antien, he gave us a tour, and I was just super excited and inspired by his passion for clean coffee. And, you know, for organic coffee, because, you know, in Vietnam, there is a movement around like clean coffee. It's called Café Sạch or pure coffee, Café Nguyen Chất, because for so long, the coffee over there is known to be blended with fillers such as soybeans or corn or artificial ingredients, oils or butters. But now with the new generation, there is a movement for like clean and pure coffee, right? And my producing partner is very passionate about that as well. So, you know, for the rest of 2017, not much had happened, but I was just like constantly thinking and doing a lot of research and a lot of like self-learning through the internet and asking friends. And then it wasn't until 2018 when I was like, okay, I'm ready to make this happen. And that's when I started actively building the business from the beginning of 2018.
That's amazing. I want to ask you a little more about just like the personality grit it takes to start a business. But I want to go backwards a little bit on the historical context that Vietnamese coffee exists in. So as you were doing research, like what were you finding out about Vietnamese coffee, and like how did that historical context kind of inform the way that Vietnamese coffee was being viewed at that moment, like in 2016, 2017?
Oh yeah, that's such a great question, because like, yeah, I was doing a lot of research about just the coffee industry and Vietnamese coffee, and also exploring this question of like, why doesn't Vietnamese coffee exist in the U.S. or why I couldn't find it. And actually, I was so surprised to learn that Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world. Like when I learned that fact, it was like my mind was blown. I was like, oh my God, Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world. Yet I didn't even know that. And I'm Vietnamese, right? And a lot of people don't know that. So that all of these like learnings just started to fuel my motivation more to increase the transparency here. And then the more I dug, I also discovered that the United States is the second largest importer of Vietnam's coffee beans. And then I was like, oh my God, like mind blown, right? So here we have this economic relationship that already exists between Vietnam and the US, but there's no transparency around it, right? And generally Americans don't associate coffee production with Vietnam. And so this for me was just like, this is really interesting what's happening here, because it's not like I'm trying to introduce a new sector, right? Or a new product, right? It just feels new because on a cultural awareness level, we don't know about it. So that really blew my mind and just gave me a lot more motivation to right this injustice, to bring more visibility to a major contributor to the global coffee experience, and to, you know, increase the representation of Vietnamese folks. And to, you know, folks in America probably have already consumed Vietnamese coffee beans in some of their products, whether they're aware of it or not. And I just wanted to build out that connection more between what folks may or may not be familiar with where it's coming from.
It seems like, so you were living in New York at the time, and you said that you would try to find coffees from Vietnam, especially like 2016, 2017. Like we already were pretty aware in most coffee shops that like you could get a coffee from a single origin. You could ask for a coffee from Honduras or Ethiopia or Sumatra. So the idea that like Vietnamese coffee is there and most people have probably drank it, but they just don't know it, is really interesting. So I was wondering, like, if you could talk a little bit about the perception of quality in terms of Vietnamese coffee, because I think if you ask some specialty coffee folks, they'd probably be like, oh, I've heard Vietnamese coffee is bad, or I actually have no idea what Vietnamese coffee tastes like.
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. So what I was finding online, you know, on like all the blogs and like all the sites, it was this general like common sentiment of Vietnamese coffee is inferior. Like literally the adjectives inferior kept popping up. And I was like, and again, as a Vietnamese American, I was like, well, that's not nice, right? And also as a Vietnamese American, like my experience of Vietnamese coffee is so different. Right, I've never seen it as inferior. I've seen it as integral and delicious and comforting, right? And so that for me is just like a pure societal and social context, right? And just and just constructs of ideas. So I already, on a personal level, just didn't agree with it because I was like, well, that's not my experience. And I know I'm not the only one, right? Because there are a lot of people in the world who drink Vietnamese coffee. And then, you know, then the blogs and people and everyone I would talk to would say, yeah, Vietnamese coffee is inferior, or even if you want to get more specific, they'd say, oh, Robusta beans are inferior and Arabica beans are superior. And that also just was like such like a shocker. And I, again, that didn't resonate with me because I was just like, how could varietals, why are we talking about varietals in a hierarchy, right? We can talk about how treatment and production can be better or worse for the environment or better or worse for the consumer. But it just wasn't, it didn't feel fair or right at all to throw these labels of hierarchy onto two different types of varieties, right? So that was what I was getting. And then, yeah, and as I was interacting with some folks in the coffee space, I just felt like a lot of people were just regurgitating old ways of thinking or regurgitating what they've heard, what they've been told. But then if I asked them, oh, have you ever had a single origin Vietnamese coffee bean? And they would all say no, right? Or I'd say, have you ever roasted a single origin Robusta bean? They'd all say no. Or like, have you ever even tried or brewed 100% Robusta beans that were single origin Vietnamese? They would say no, right? So that blew my mind that people had such strong opinions around Vietnamese coffee beans and Robusta beans, but they actually had never actually experienced it. And that for me just showed the power of just narratives or like old narratives and old ways of thinking, right? However, I do want to point out, actually, like, you know, there is some truth to this, to these ideas, right, of Vietnamese coffee beans being a different level of quality. And that there is some truth to that because Vietnam's coffee industry for so long has been channeled into like mass market coffee, right? Or like large volumes of coffee products. And I think when that's happening, where the products are being sold at a lower rate, that's just gonna control the pricing, right? And also control the care that we have as producers or as buyers for the production of the coffee, right? So I think, but that is a systematic thing and that's a control thing and that's a construct of the value we place on a product, which affects what we're willing to pay for it, which then again, doesn't create any incentives for producers to change or improve like their production, right?
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but the idea that quality is inherent is kind of a problematic way to think about things, especially now that you've explained a lot of the kind of like the ways that Vietnamese coffee has been funneled into our culture, where it's like we have designated it as this like lower grade thing. We've put it in instant coffee. We've controlled it so that like its value is lower. And then when we suddenly start to prize coffee in a different way, because specialty coffee is still a fairly new way of consuming coffee. To say that like Vietnamese coffee doesn't make the cut is really interesting because it assumes quality issues when really it's a social construct and it's an issue of like, well, we funneled this coffee to be in this other space for so long and then we never gave it a moment to be at the level that we consider specialty coffee to be.
Exactly. And you know what? And I will say that there's Vietnam in general as a country, as a coffee producer country, like there is a lot of work to be done, you know, across the board for it to improve its production. But that's also, like you said, because of the systems that have entrapped it in so long into a certain tier production, right? But I know because I know through my own direct relationships and my own interactions that there are so many people in Vietnam, from consumers to nonprofit organizations to producers and farmers, who want to be a part of the specialty coffee movement, right? They're like, wait, what? Like, people are paying what for Ethiopian? They want to be a part of it because they want to improve their quality of life too, right? But if no one is looking to them to buy it, then they're not going to spend time to invest in their own production, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering, once you started your company, like what were those first couple of months like and how would you communicate like what was happening to farmers? Like what was happening to you, to farmers? Because I imagine like, you know, we live in this age of social media and the internet, like it's not hard now, especially for farmers, to see like what people are paying for coffee, or that there's a specialty coffee market that exists. I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that, like, farmers want to be part of this process. And I imagine now it's especially super visible, and you've given some visibility to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll first share in terms of when I first launched, like, on the consumer end, Ashley, I was met with just so much excitement and enthusiasm, right? Like, and I think this is where within the specialty coffee space, sometimes there's a disconnect between what's happening within the industry and what's happening with consumers. Cause like within the industry, folks could say all day, like, Vietnamese coffee is inferior, Vietnamese coffee isn't good. But on a consumer level, like, consumers don't know about these old ways of thinking, and they sometimes they also just don't care. They just care what tastes good to them, right? And what they like. And so from the consumer end, we were met with just so much support and excitement around Vietnamese coffee as a culture, and then also as a taste. So once people engage our product, like, we've continued to get such amazing feedback around people who just say our coffee is delicious. Someone wrote, your coffee is divine, the other day. Like, they're like, this is the best coffee I've ever tasted. Like, and consumers, they don't care that it's robust. Whether they care or not, it doesn't matter to them, right? All that they care about is that it tastes great. So that has been the reaction on that front, which has been so affirming and so nice. And it's, and for me, it's been really affirming because, of course, I had some, you know, not a lot, but of course I felt a little nervous about entering the industry with something that, with a product or an idea that was just so hugely opposed, you know, or that was just, that just seems so unpopular. But at the end of the day, I was like, whatever, like, this is what I like, and this is what I'm going to put out. And, you know, I don't need, I'm not here to convince anyone, or I'm not here to convert anywhere. I'm just here to find the people who like what I like. And then on, you know, the producing side of things, you know, I work with one farmer, one producer who, you know, has a team, and then he has like a whole like network of cousins and aunts who also have farms. But the last time I met with him, you know, he sells his coffee to like Japan, and he also sells domestically. And I was like, what is your dream? Like, why do you want to work together? And he said, I think it would be so cool if my coffee beans made it to America. And I was like, wow. And that's just like this global cultural play of just like the power that America has in the eyes of others. But he said that, and I was like, that's so cool. And of course, like, I pay like higher rates than if he was selling to people in Vietnam or Japan, right? And on top of that, he said something that was really touching. He said, you know, like in Vietnam, like, coffee culture in Vietnam is huge because they know they're number two in the world, and they know they're number one for robust in the world. And they take a lot of pride in that, on top of coffee culture being a huge part of daily life. And they also know that people don't know that about them, and they feel a level of sadness and pain. And one time I was talking to one of my partners, and he said, in Vietnam, he said, cafe Vietnam có tiếng mà không có tiếng. And what that means is Vietnamese coffee has notoriety, but it, no, Vietnamese coffee has fame, but it doesn't have notoriety, right? So it's this idea of like, once it leaves the country, like, it kind of gets stripped of its identity.
That's incredible. I have so many feelings about all the things you just said, but I want to talk a little bit about the idea of quality, because something that like was kind of, I would imagine, a big hurdle for you is that you kind of had to redefine quality a little bit. Obviously, you had your customers kind of telling you what they like and they don't like, but kind of existing in this space where like Vietnamese coffee has been disregarded as like a quality coffee. Like, how did you kind of start to think about redefining what quality meant? And did you have to kind of break out of like ideas of like what was good or what was bad, or like even for yourself think about like, what, how do I present a thing that I'm super confident in that maybe the rest of the industry hasn't seen yet?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And to be honest, actually, I've, you know, dealt with my share of insecurities around this question too, of like, I'm entering an industry that has certain standards, expectations for quality or specialty. And, you know, our coffee has never been graded. You know, in a lot of ways, I haven't engaged with certain expectations within the industry because I'm not a veteran of the industry, to be honest, right? I entered this space like three years ago, maybe four. And if I was going with standards expectations, I would never be importing Robusta beans, right? So our coffee has never been graded because I simply just don't care to meet that that level of expectation or standard or validation. You know, I just care so much more about the people within my ecosystem. I care so much about my relationship with my partner and how that relationship is going. And I care so much about my relationship with my customers and what they think. And like, at the end of the day, like, do they like this coffee? Like, that's what matters to me. And quality, you know, of course, in terms of production, when I met my producing partner, I felt like I got really lucky because I met someone who was also just so passionate about the clean coffee movement in Vietnam, and his company, you know, is like awarded top 20 companies in the country for like organic practices. And so people ask me like, oh, do you have any certifications? And we have no certifications, right? To be totally honest, because certifications, again, are very expensive, they're inaccessible, and my producing partner would not necessarily know how to navigate the bureaucracy of getting certified and or would have the resources to do that, right? And I remember I was on a panel recently at Coffee Fest with Roast Magazine, and someone from the and it was me and two other roasters. And someone asked the question of, oh, do you care about certifications when you're buying green beans? And I was so nervous about this question because I know that I didn't deal with certification. And the other two also said, no, we don't care about certification, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. And I felt so validated that they said that. And so again, like these are like, people have, I think, societally have standards, expectations about what is quality, what is value, like is it certified, is it graded, all these things. And I think that just to an extent that can be important because there are systems to like validate or qualify certain things. But at least for me right now within my journey and working within what I have and valuing what I have, I just care more about the relationship rather than getting a certification. And I know that my partner is, I've been to his farm several times. Like I've seen his process. I know that he's extremely passionate about clean organic coffee. And so that is how I think about quality. And then of course, when we roast it, you know, how does it taste? Do I like it? Is it something that I'm proud to stand behind? And then do other people like it? That's been kind of like my metrics for putting out a product of quality and value.
Which totally makes sense. Like it seems like a little simplistic in a way, but at the same time, it's like we all want things that taste good. Yeah. And in a way, sometimes it can feel like the way that we evaluate coffee is almost convoluted. Like if a coffee is an 88, that matters to people who are like Q graders that yeah. are experts. But exactly. If I tell a customer this coffee scored an 88, like yeah. what does that mean? Doesn't yeah, mean anything.
Exactly. I think because before I became, you know, before I started the company, I think because I was that type of consumer that fell so much into that demographic of, I don't know a lot about coffee. I've never used a scale before. I don't know brew ratios off the top of my head. I don't know anything about, you know, grading or scoring. I just know what I like, you know, and as a consumer, I just felt such a disconnect from what was happening in specialty coffee. And I just felt like, I felt like I can't be the only one, right? So when I started my company, we're a people-centered company, which means we're always thinking about people every step of the way. And so that just translates into the product we produce and how we put it out always with thinking about the end consumer in mind rather than, you know, some other standards, expectations that may be valued by other people in the industry.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like it feels like in a way you're very much part of the specialty coffee conversation, but in a way you almost exist outside of it. Because like you're doing the things that we in specialty coffee like prize in a way. Like we're like, we talk about wages for farmers. We talk about creating, helping producers like get more money for their coffee. But at the same time, when we write out a whole region, when we write out a whole country, it's like, well, is that in line with the values of specialty coffee? I would say no.
Yeah, that's, you know what? Thank you for saying that, Ashley, because I felt that too, you know, when I was starting the company. I was like, well, here we are at this moment in time where there's so much care in the coffee community around transparency and visibility, right, and connection. And I just felt like those values were not being applied to people in Vietnam. And so that disconnect was definitely a huge motivating factor for me to change it.
So what has it been like having, like, opening a coffee shop, being in New York, which is, like, you know, kind of the center of the coffee world, I would say, right now in the United States, and doing something totally different?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to clarify that we don't have a coffee shop. We don't have a retail space. We had a four-month pop-up that operated 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. So it was a pretty heavy coffee program. But right now we are mostly focusing on importing and roasting, and we're DSC. So we're focusing mostly on selling online. And then of course we had like some wholesale partnerships, which are now at a halt with everything happening with Corona. But yeah, so we're mostly focused on importing and roasting and selling direct to consumers online. Go ahead, Ashley.
Yeah. Oh, no. I was just going to say, like, so yeah, how do you make that sale? Like, especially in a system that's so entrenched in like certain perceptions of what coffee is like. I imagine direct to consumer was probably a little bit of an easier sell, but like, I imagine wholesale must have been a little bit more challenging.
Not really, because, you know, there's actually an entire community and population and segment of business that serve coffee that a lot of specialty coffee roasters are not paying attention to, right? And these businesses I'm talking to are all the Asian bent restaurants, bakeries, cafes that also serve coffee, right? Whether they're serving a Vietnamese coffee or they're a boba shop that also has an espresso machine or an Asian bakery that focuses on Asian treats and they also serve coffee, right? And also with this wave of first generation, you know, entrepreneurs, there are a lot more restaurants, whether it's a Vietnamese restaurant or a Thai restaurant or, you know, an Asian based restaurant that also serve coffee, right? So I've actually gotten a lot of inbound since we launched, because prior to my company launching, I think a lot of people were using, the most common products people were using for their Vietnamese coffee were Cafe Du Monde, which is not a Vietnamese coffee brand. And I don't even know where they get their coffee beans from, because it's not clear anywhere on their packaging or website. It's also not like a fresh roasted like coffee brand. And or products from Vietnam, which are imported from Vietnam, that state on the packaging that it also includes artificial flavorings and ingredients, right? So there actually hasn't been a product like New York Coffee Supply that is direct trade, imported and roasted fresh in Brooklyn, Vietnamese coffee beans. So, but there were all these businesses that were serving the idea of Vietnamese coffee. And so it's kind of like I've kind of offered a new iteration or an improved product for something that already existed. And none of these coffee roasters, no one was speaking to this demographic. And so in that space, it hasn't been a hard sell. People actually reach out to us all the time because there aren't a lot of options. But if I was trying to approach like a coffee shop or hotel, right, that may be serving more of like a bigger roaster, then that is definitely a harder sell. Not just because of the beans, because I think with all of our storytelling, we've been able to really, I don't know if you've seen our press articles, but there's a huge culture shift now happening. Everything from CNN writing recently, Why the World Waked Up to Vietnamese Coffee, like Matador Network wrote recently, like it's passed to that we respect Vietnamese coffee beans. So there is a culture shift happening. And I think the more storytelling that we're able to push, the more people are like, whoa, what is this Vietnamese coffee bean? I actually kind of want to have this like unique product in my shop now, right? So, and I think as that grows, that will become less difficult. The main thing that's difficult for us right now to kind of compete with other roasters is because we're so small, we can't offer like the whole array of services like tech support or like free machines or, you know, 24/7 maintenance. Like that's the thing that's kind of holding us back the most with the traditional coffee hotel space.
I want to go back on something you said about the attention that the media has paid attention to you folks, because you're right. Like when I was doing research before we started talking, there are dozens of articles about Vietnamese coffee, about you specifically. And I wonder, like, what has that been like to see Vietnamese coffee receive so much attention? And I wonder like how, and you've mentioned this a little bit too, like how storytelling and like just putting the spotlight on Vietnamese coffee has kind of affected the way that your business can operate and the way that we view Vietnamese coffee in general.
Yeah, that's such a great question.
Was it surprising? Like, because I was looking at the articles that have been written about you, and I'm like, I can't think of a lot of other coffee companies that have been so well covered.
Oh, thanks, Ashley. It does surprise me, and honestly, it is the greatest joy of this job to have, you know, this, to have our narrative and our perspective being amplified like this. Like, and honestly, actually, this is the reason why I started the coffee company. It's not because I want to get into one of the hardest industries of learning how to import and roast and, you know, sell coffee beans. Like, I mean, that's a small part of it, but really, like, in my heart, it's because I just cared so much about increasing representation for Vietnamese people, producers, culture, and coffee, right? Like that is like my true mission. And I'm using coffee, a very, you know, globally shared experience as a platform to get there. And so when I see like these headlines, honestly, Ashley, sometimes I kind of like freak out inside because I'm like, holy shit, it's happening, right? And that it's happening is not about my business is growing. It's happening is the fucking shift is happening. Like the culture shift is happening. These old ways of thinking that put Vietnamese coffee and people and culture down is changing, right? People are starting to appreciate Vietnamese coffee now. People are starting to respect it. Vietnamese people and culture producers are starting to get recognition. Like that is happening, and that it just gives me chills to see the shift happening, and it's happening like in this moment. And then I just feel such a deep sense of gratitude for all the writers, all the people who take the time to listen and take the time to write and to amplify and to share. It's really, I don't even have all the words to describe this feeling, but it's been such an incredible joy to be able to play a role in like honoring Vietnamese people and culture through coffee.
I mean, that's incredible. It's incredible to feel like, I imagine it must be incredible to feel like you're doing a thing and people are noticing it and you're like, yes, like I'm on the right track. Like I'm doing something. Cause I imagine like you can have self-confidence always and you can be like, I know I'm doing the right thing, but there is like, there is like a deep validation to feeling like, oh, other people are also noticing it and also give a shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, the articles about us, they're not just product focused. It's not like, check out this new company that is producing this really cool coffee, right? It's not about, it's the fact that these articles and the way that people are understanding us and the way they're writing about us, it's really about a global movement and a global shift, right? Like that's what I think is so empowering about this process. Cause it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, here's a new cool company and here's a new cool product. It's, the headlines are so culture shifting, and it has such a deep impact, you know, for the industry, for producers, and also for consumers. Like, I can't even tell you how many like amazing messages I get from, you know, consumers who are generally Asian American, or more specifically Vietnamese American. And so many times, actually, people write to me and they say three words that just blow me away. And they say, "I feel seen," right? And these are Vietnamese Americans and Asian Americans, you know, like a lot of POCs, people, communities of color, you know, we deal with lack of representation in the media all the time, in leadership position, in government, in business. And that lack of representation is so deep that when they see their name reflected on a coffee bag, they're like, "Oh, I feel seen," right? And that level of impact is also just so deeply rewarding for me, because, you know, my work, if you looked at my work before I started the coffee company, it's always been rooted in representation and community empowerment. So that has been really incredible for me to experience this journey.
So just because, you know, we're in this moment in time, I think it's kind of hard to ignore, and we talked a little bit about it, but coronavirus has obviously affected pretty much every coffee company across the nation, across the globe. And I wonder how that has shifted the way that you've operated your business. Because you're probably set up, I would imagine, a little bit better than most, just because you do a lot of direct-to-consumer sales. But I'm also imagining that, like, you know, I'm looking at your Instagram account and I'm looking at your social media presence and your website, and I'm like, oh, you guys, like, you folks are ready for this moment. Not in a positive way. I don't mean it to be territorial or predatory in any way, but it's like, you also seem to understand that, like, the shift in how businesses work will be direct to consumers and will rely more on social media. So I wonder, like, how, number one, how coronavirus has affected you, and number two, like, how you posit yourself now as a business that is kind of having to look to the future because things are going to be different.
Yeah, those are excellent questions. So when we launched the company, we launched as a D2C business, as a digital forward company. So we did spend a lot of time building out this infrastructure and this ecosystem of, you know, social media meets content meets commerce. And because, you know, I am at heart, I'm a storyteller. You know, I've had a career as a filmmaker. I love telling stories. And so, you know, creating content and telling stories through social media and also through our blog, we publish like at least 2 to 4 new blog posts weekly. Like, we love telling stories. Like, that's always been such a big part of our business. And, you know, at the beginning of this year, I was like, okay, now I really want to go into the B2B space, and I want to grow out the B2B program, and I want to, you know, expand our business model in that way. And so we were working on that. And, you know, by, you know, like in February, like B2B sales was like 35% of our revenue. So not totally crippling, but of course, all of that came to a screeching halt when all of our retail partners kind of closed their doors. So then as soon as that happened, of course, I was like, I mean, as a human, I was just freaking out about the world. And then I was also just like really feeling a lot of pain for all of my partners and some of my closest friends in New York are restaurant owners, because I used to be a restaurant owner. I'm really, you know, tight with the F&B community here. And so I was just feeling a lot of pain over everything that's happening there. But yeah, so we did quickly pivot. I mean, I was like, and it wasn't like we had to rebuild our business model because we were already D2C. It was just like, okay, now we're putting all the B2B stuff on hold. All of our B2B sales have stopped. We're not going to do outbound strategy anymore. We're just going to focus all of our energy now back to D2C. And within the D2C space, the shift I was making, and then I was talking to my team about this, was, you know, it is so important that we proceed right now with a lot of compassion and empathy, and just thinking about what value we can bring to our digital community, right? Like, doubling down, of course, on our core offering, which is coffee. Like, how can we bring comfort to people? Yes, coffee. Like, that's where we've always done that, and we want to continue doing that. But I also just, like, felt understanding like the needs of our community. It's like our community, they're coffee drinkers, and they're coffee drinkers across all industries and across all experiences and all cultures. And so we did a lot of thinking around like, how else can we support our community during this time? And so that included like creating, you know, a lot of content around like self-care for people who are staying home right now. We created a post around how people could generate some income from home. You know, we're working on creating a list of digital tools for people. We launched a campaign called Make Mornings Better, offering 10 steps to fortify their mornings, everything from like stretching to meditating to, you know, sharing the day with gratitude to doing a power pose. You know, so for us, again, we've always been a people-centered company. We've always thought about the people first, from our producing partners to our consumers. So yeah, during this time, as we did that quick pivot into D2C, it wasn't just about like, buy our coffee, you need coffee now. It was like, okay, well, how can we be really empathetic and compassionate right now and add and create value in addition to coffee to support our community? And that's where a lot of the content came in. And also this Saturday, we're doing our first Zoom session. We had a monthly event series where we hosted at our roastery, but since people can't come together, we're going to start doing sessions over Zoom together.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just hearing like all the different ideas that kind of feel like, number one, they're like big pivots, but at the same time, they also feel really natural and organic to the business that you've already created. Yeah. As we close out, I was wondering, is there anything that you'd want people to know about you listening to this?
Anything that I would want people to know about me? That's a good question, Ashley. No one's ever asked me that. To know about me?
Yeah.
Who's listening, first of all?
Baristas, I think. Maybe some other coffee professionals. I don't know. Sometimes people message me and they're like, I love that episode. And I'm like, oh, you listen? That's great.
To know about me? I don't know. I'm kind of drawing a blank, but I want to give you something. What would I want listeners to know about me? I would say in this moment, I just want to continue to find ways to support people, whether that's my team or, you know, or my family or the community, with what I have. You know, that's it. And right now, one of the things that I have is Noon Coffee Supply as a platform, you know? So just, yeah, I don't know, Ashley, that's a tough question.
No, that's fair. Something that I'm always, this is like, I feel like this is the part of the conversation, if like people don't care about like the weird things that I care about, they can shut off right now. But the things that I'm always really interested in are like the personality traits, or like the things that kind of make, that kind of define a person. And not to say that there are certain defining characteristics to every person, or that they're immobile or fixed. But something that I'm really drawn by with you is that like you saw like this thing happening, and then you kind of just like went for it, it feels like, which is kind of incredible, and not something to be glossed over. So I wonder, like, have you always been that type of person to just like see a problem or see something that you were like, why is it this way? And I'm going to go find out.
I have always been the type of person that love to explore like potential. Like I always want to see how far I can take it. I always want to see what I can do. And I know exactly where that feeling comes from. At a very young age, I just felt like the pain of stereotypes, and I felt like the pain of being boxed in, you know, with the model minority myth. You don't know what that is, you can Google that, like, you know, being deemed a, you know, the model minority myth. And basically, I felt like society was just boxing me into such a one-dimensional a person of who I could be as an Asian American, as a woman, you know. And I just hated that feeling at such a young age. And I was like, I just want to like smash this box open and just like see how far I can take it. So that has always been a part of me. And I think whether it's been through my film career or through starting New Coffee Supply, I just love seeing what's possible. And I want to keep trying to do as much as I can and see how far I can take it before I pass it off to the next generation. You know, like that is something that really excites me. And also, one thing that I want people to know in this moment is that, you know, I really just want to help, you know, in all aspects. Like, I just want to help. I want to help people get through this corona situation, you know, whether it's donating a part of our sales or starting the Ndaku Workers Fund or supporting my team or, you know, helping to shift the culture of music. I just want to help. So if anybody out there wants to do some cool things to help the world, like, I'm super open.
Thank you for taking time to talk to me. This has been such an incredible, shared moment, and I'm really appreciative that I got to spend some time with you.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you so much for taking the time to reach out, and thank you for listening, and thank you for helping to tell our story.
That was Sarah Nguyen, founder of Nguyen Coffee Supply in Brooklyn, New York. You can learn more about Nguyen Coffee Supply by following them on social media, Nguyen Coffee Supply, all one word. Thanks for listening to this episode. I know it was really fast, and I hope you got a lot of great information from it, like I did. See you next time. Boss Barista is made by me, Ashley Rodriguez, in collaboration with Good Beer Hunting, which is an industry-leading design studio, editorial platform, and podcast examining all the ways we look at the things that we eat and drink. You can check out more at goodbeerhunting.com. Seriously, their stories are incredible. My favorite series right now is the Humanity and Hospitality series that they've been running for the past couple of months, examining different ways that we look at people in the service industry. Special thanks to Jesse Raub and Jordan Stalling. Also, special thanks to our music contributors, the band Lost in the Sun. You've made this podcast sound incredible. I'm just looking for a better day.